Good morning.
Good morning.
There you go. All right. We're awake today. I have nothing to disclose, so we can skip through that. I want to start today by presenting to you a framework called Role Strain and Adaptation. And part of this framework and part of the reason that we chose this particular framework is because a lot of research on African-American men and African-American men's health behavior doesn't tend to take its full context into account. So a lot of the research on basically gender role theory tends to ignore race and class, also tends to ignore basically where men are in the life course. A lot of research that looks at racial and ethnic health disparities tends not to take into account gender. And so we need theories and we need theoretical frameworks that can account for race, class, and gender. And so that's one of the frameworks that I'm going to offer to you today. We're going to present some findings from a qualitative study that builds on this framework and helps to further explore this framework that was really developed by a social psychologist named Phil Bowman and was really developed without health being really primarily in mind. And so we've tried to adapt it and look at it and look at different things. If we think about our theme of social justice, how do you actually take a lot of the social determinants of health and actually figure out how they get into the body? And there are various pathways that I don't have the time to talk through now, but some of them are through behavior, some of them are through physiological stress pathways, and so we need a robust enough framework to be able to think through how those things would actually play out. And so we'll talk about some of that through our qualitative study and through some of the implications of this research as well. So role strain, as I mentioned, is basically the fundamental notion of it is it simply that if we want to understand African-American men's health behavior and social context, we have to look at one of the primary ways that, what are the primary things that they're actually dealing with? And a lot of that is useful to look at their social roles. So for African-American men, and particularly our study was on middle-aged African-American men, the roles of being a spouse, being a father, being a provider and being an employee were all very key roles in their lives. And one of the things that we can misrepresent in health behavior in particular is that people don't want to do the right thing. They don't want to engage in physical activity. They don't want to eat healthy. They don't want to go to the doctor. And actually, this is the complete opposite of what we found. It's not that they don't want to do those things, but in their social and cultural context, those are not the priorities. Their priorities are to actually fulfill these social roles. And that's been ingrained in them as when they were growing up. It's something that resonates with their spouses and other people in their community, and it's almost a social and cultural expectation. So we have to put these things in that sign of context to really understand how these men are prioritizing health or not prioritizing their own health, and understand that that's actually a positive thing, that the irony is it's a challenge that they're actually trying to engage in positive behavior to actually be responsible men in their communities and not trying to simply shirk their responsibility, which is a lot of the discourse that you hear, particularly about African-American men. And so we have to find this balance between health and these social responsibilities. Okay, as soon as this cooperates. No, it wasn't. But. Okay, so our research questions for this particular study are, how do African-American men's social commitments and cultural responsibilities influence their health behaviors? And what are the contextual barriers to physical activity and healthy eating in African-American men's lives? And our focus groups, we did 14 focus groups in Flint and Ypsilanti, Michigan, between July 2008 and March 2009. That we did had a semi-structured interview guide. We had basically four or five core questions, but a lot of probes to allow men to explore these different issues. We had separate groups that were, on physical activity, separate groups on eating, and a component of this I'm not going to talk about is we actually did groups with women who were connected to these African-American men about men's eating and physical activity, because as we're thinking of developing interventions, we know that men's health has to occur in that particular context, and given that the majority of our men here and middle-aged men are married or at least have a significant woman in their lives, that we have to take that into account if we're going to actually address their health behavior. We recruited primarily through snowball sampling, and we had community partners, community representatives who actually did the focus groups as well as the recruitment. And the incentives were dinner and either a $20 gift card or a small George Foreman Bureau. I know, I thought that was pretty cool. Anyway, can't say I came up with it. That's the value of having community partners. Okay, so all of our participants were African-American men. There were 105 of them across the 14 groups. The average age was about 55. The range was between 33 and 77. And just not to go through these characteristics in tremendous detail, but what you see is a pattern of a lot of them, you know, almost 90% of them were married. About a third of them had children in the home. About half had some difficulty paying bills in their household. About a quarter were college graduates. And a big proportion of them, almost 80%, were also very active in their community. And that's going to come back up as a particularly important thing to think about. And if you think about their health, interestingly, I think this was a function of how we asked the question. And we actually had a very poor question around physical activity. But if we take at face value that three quarters of them were reporting that they at least engaged in what are considered recommended levels of physical activity, which is 30 minutes a day, you know, most days of the week, and they still has, you see as the last bullet point, at least one chronic health problem, it simply suggests that that's not enough. And actually, most of those guidelines are simply a maintenance guideline and not something that if you actually are trying to improve your health, that level of physical activity is going to actually help. Okay, so data analysis, very quickly, we used a qualitative analysis, mostly a thematic analysis strategy. Not going to go through this in detail. We've used this multiple times. We used Atlas TI to help us organize the data. We chunked the data into meaningful units. The relevance of that to the quotes that I'm going to present to you is, and one of the potential limitations of the strategy that we used, is the way that we did our thematic analysis, the quotes had to be something that could stand alone outside of the context of the focus group. So we didn't do ethnographic analysis, which would allow you to keep the context. We chose quotes that would allow us to basically understand them outside of their context. So that is both a strength and a limitation that I do acknowledge. We developed a code book, coded the themes, and looked for basically compiled them into documents and looked for more extensive codes and themes as we pursued it and developed the core areas and ideas. Okay. So the first primary theme that we faced were basically how men prioritize health and the primacy of their social commitments versus their own individual health and just their own individual identity. And so if you look at just the highlighted portions of the quote, we commit ourselves to work, we commit ourselves to family, we commit ourselves to community. There's always someone pulling at us, it's always something that we have to do. So by the time you start thinking about yourself, it's a little too late. And this we saw as representing a key issue that a lot of them, again, their health was something that was a later priority. I mean, all of these things were priorities, so it's not that, you know, they didn't care about their health or so forth, but they cared primarily about these other roles that they were fulfilling in their community. And that we couldn't just tell them, you know, you need to put those other things aside, and in your leisure time, go ahead and engage in physical activity, which in some cases, in some contexts, was seen as almost selfish. Because if they weren't figuring out how to balance these things in the context of their lives, spending that kind of time on themselves without taking care of these other responsibilities primarily was a difficult thing to reconcile in the context of their social lives. A lot of them felt like they were basically getting by. And so this context of, in this quote about survival mode, was something that essentially is similar to the first notion, but this really gets into what is analogous to some of the literature on John Henryism, which is basically if men are spending all their time dealing with high effort coping or different strategies to actually try to deal with things in their lives, and they're spending all their energy and time there and their focus and attention there, it's very difficult to then carve out time to figure out where and how you're going to engage in physical activity, healthy eating, or whatever the healthier behavior might be. Just as an aside, in the effort of being fully disclosing, actually when I started this study and started this work, I was not really that interested in physical activity or eating. So I apologize to the ACS that primarily funded me. Please don't be here if you are. But the point of, I raised that here because what eating and physical activity represent are basic healthy behaviors that everybody has to do. Regardless of whether or not you're interested in those things as core concepts, those are basic behaviors that everybody has to engage in. So if it's a model, what we basically use this as is a model of health behavior, thank you, that we need to think about in the context of it represents things that the same sort of concepts would apply to going to the doctor and other types of health behaviors that we know are representative of things that people have to engage in the context of their lives. So it's a useful model in that respect. Okay. The issue of time was also another big issue. Concept and barrier. Again, time was in the context of trying to fulfill these other roles. And a lot of them, even though a third of them only had kids in the home, a lot of times they were involved in whether it was grandkids' lives, extended family, or just other community responsibilities and activities. Again, you saw that almost 80% of them were involved in some kind of organizations and activities. Those, again, were seen as primarily as their primary roles and their primary functions in the context of their lives, not their own individual health. Okay. Eating was a very interesting one. We didn't get into this a lot, and you haven't seen me sort of talk about physical activity and eating in this in a lot of detail, and I'm not going to hear that much. But eating is its own animal as it relates to African-American men in the context of their lives. And what we found is essentially that we couldn't, as opposed to physical activity, where a lot of it was really dependent on men and their motivation, their ability to sort of carve this out and negotiate this on their own. And their wives, in a lot of cases, or their significant others, were played a lesser role in a lot of cases in terms of motivating them and figuring out how they were going to negotiate this issue of time and space and when they were going to do it. Eating was a whole different thing, where it was really very much dependent on how they negotiated that relationship with their spouse. In a lot of cases, eating and just the whole concept of eating was really primarily something they associated with dinner and dinner with primarily a spouse, and largely, if they had their preference, dinner cooked by their spouse, or dinner that was that their spouse, they and their spouses actually went out and made a decision to eat out or something like that. But it was something that they didn't have immediate control over. But when you ask them basic questions, and even when we probed a lot about eating, they always went back to dinner and Sunday dinner, which were two very different concepts that, again, don't have time to get into today. But that those were the primary things they talked about. And they didn't talk about breakfast, they didn't talk about lunch, they didn't talk about snacking, because those weren't considered meals in the same way. And so the point of raising all of this is that we have to think about they're doing a lot of eating through basically three quarters of the day, and they're not paying attention to that. They're just fulfilling themselves enough so that they can keep on moving to doing the things that are more important and not paying attention to what they're eating. Thank you. Last quote here is just the issue of stress. And stress has a couple of different components, certainly the physiological part, and there's some research done by James Jackson and other folks about how stress is connected to sometimes coping behaviors. And the short version of his model of looking at the HPA axis is that a lot of times what he was trying to initially explain was why African Americans had lower rates of mental health disorders and higher rates of physical health disorders. And one of the primary mechanisms that he found was that African Americans were very good at finding coping mechanisms that would protect their mental health so they would have an immediate benefit to reduce the stress that they experienced, but that was harmful to their physical health overall. Eating was one of those behaviors. Sedentary lifestyle was another sort of behavior. Thank you. And so we have these types of things that men are experiencing and trying to balance in the context of their lives. And so both the psychological experience of being stressed, and that's certainly leading to encouraging men to be more sedentary and so forth, and also the psychological just stress and strain and the physiological response of just being tired more often also was a major factor as well. So in summary, we have to think about men's health behavior and men's health in general in their social context and recognize the hierarchy of responsibilities that they have in the context of their lives. Eating and physical activity and other health behaviors have to be understood in the context of their other aspects of their lives, and we can't sort of divorce it from that and treat it like it's completely separate from that. And motivation, stress, and physical exhaustion are all barriers to physical activity that, again, have to be understood in that social and cultural context. And regardless of knowledge, we have to help men figure out, and regardless of all these issues that I'm talking about, I'm not trying to make excuses for men, but it's just trying to lay out a more broad picture of what are the barriers that they're facing. And this is an effort to add some richness to that picture. So thank you.